Good evening. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Any new people? Okay. Have you ever been to the center before? Okay, so you know where the bathrooms are and all that stuff. Okay. Cell phones off, or if you're expecting an urgent call and it needs to ring, don't worry about it. We'll just deal with it when it happens. We're still in samsara. Okay. I'm going to actually reverse this. Well, how did the week go? Any questions, comments? Anybody try it? What?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. Any questions? Nope. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. This regards the Nine Mount meditation. I am unclear on whether I do everything with just the right hand or whether I exchange hands, like, you know.
And you exchange
like
the hands?
And then I exchange the hands like this.
And we are going to be doing that several times tonight, so
okay.
We'll go over it. Great.
Right,
perfect question. Thank you. Sure, no, great.
Random. The stream from last week that you guys recorded, is it posted somewhere so that we can go listen to that?
If you remember, you can get the audio recording on their website.
Okay.
If you go to YouTube, the video recordings are there.
Okay. Did everybody hear that? Okay. So just a reminder about posture. Kind of grounded, you know, somehow comfortable either in your seat or on the cushion if you can be. Back straight, heads tilted, hands in your lap. I mean, some people, this is kind of one of the things that's done, but a lot of people like this, whatever works for you, arms slightly away from your side, head slightly tilted down the ski slope of your nose, and mouth lightly closed with your tongue touching the top palate and the back of your teeth. So take a second and settle in here. And what I'm going to do is we're going to do a body scan, watching our breath, and then I'm going to lead us through 9-round breathing, and I'm going to take us all the way through it verbally to hopefully clear up any confusion about right, left hand and all of that. And once, and then I'm going to take us through it a second time with the visualization. And then I got answers to some of the questions that were raised about 9-round breathing, and so we'll talk more about it and why it might work. So just kind of get yourself settled and take about, you know, 30 seconds, a minute to just check in with your body, you know, starting at your, you know, your legs and hips, and if anything is tense, see if you can just give it permission to let go. It's unless you walk out, you're it's here for the next hour and a few minutes, and so tell your body it can relax. No place to go, nothing to do. And kind of come up through your body and where you notice some tension. Take a nice breath. Breathe into it. Allow yourself to relax. Allow it to relax. And just slowly make your way up taking a breath whenever it feels comfortable to. You know, recognizing the tension. And if it talks back and says, no, not letting go, say, okay, move on. Coming up to the crown of your head, now take a minute here to just watch your breath. Don't even bother to count. Just pay attention to the sensation of breathing in, breathing out. Now, on your next inhale, count one. When you've reached a comfortable inhale, pause for a second and exhale. Two. So as we're doing this first round of 9-round breathing, if it helps to watch me, so and hopefully my verbal directions will be clear. So we're going to do, we're going to start with our, any finger of your left hand that you're comfortable with, closing your left nostril. Breathing in through your right nostril. When you hit the base of a comfortable inhale, just hold it there for a nanosecond, and then while you're holding it there, switch your left hand to your right nostril, close your right nostril, and breathe out through your left nostril. So we're going to do this 3 times. Breathe in. Hold. Breathe out. Breathe in. Hold. Breathe out. Breathe in, hold, breathe out. Now switch hands and take your right hand and close the right nostril and breathe in through your left nostril. Hold, breathe out. Breathe in. hold. Breathe out. Now just take 3 breaths through both nostrils, breathing in through your nostrils and out through your nostrils. Breathe in, hold. Breathe out. Breathe in, hold. Breathe out. Breathe in, hold. Breathe out. Okay. Now I'm going to walk you through it with the visualization. Before I do that, again, I'm going to review. There are many channels in your body, but the ones we're focusing on now are 3 main channels. There's a channel to the right and left of your spine, and running right down your the central channel, running in front of the spine. The central channel is like a shepherd's hook. The beginning of it starts. Sometimes people have called this place the place of the third eye. If you see a lot of statues of the Buddha, it'll look like there's a little curl of hair coming out here. But it comes here and then down, you know. Okay? The other, and ending about 4 fingers below your navel chakra. On the either side, there's I think the white channel is on the left and the red channel is on the right, and they run from about here down the all the way down to about 4 fingers below the navel. When we breathe in and then hold and breathe out, one of the things we do before we start is we think of the tubes as connecting to each other. So in this visualization, what we're going to be doing is, and when we pause, we're breathing in. The visualization when we breathe in is going to be that we're breathing in luminous white light that flows down through the left channel. Comes in. And then as you switch to breathing out, all of the impurities and lack of concentration and mindfulness and confusion and all of the things that are disturbing to our bodies and our minds exit. So starting again with closing your left nostril with your left hand. Breathe in, imagining luminous light entering your body. And as it reaches right below your navel chakra, switch your hand and close your right nostril with your left hand and breathe out, expelling all of the confusion. And you can think of it as kind of a dark cloud leaving. Now close your left nostril again. Breathe in luminous light traveling down, filling the channel, And then switching to your other nostril, breathe out and all of the negativities, impurities, confusion, lack of concentration. Leave through the force of this luminous light, pushing it out. Now a third time, close your left nostril. Breathe in luminous light. Breathe out. Anything dark and interfering is forced out by this luminous light. Now switch to your right hand and close your right nostril. Breathe in luminous light. And as it moves below the navel chakra and into the other channel, forcing out any impurities or difficulties. Again, close your right nostril and breathe in through your left. And close your left nostril with your right hand and breathe out all the impurities. Close your right nostril again. Breathe in, clearing in luminous light, the clarity of the sky. And you reach the base and it moves into the other channel. Close your left nostril. Breathe out through your right, letting all of the cloudiness leave. Now take three breaths and imagine that you're filling the central channel, all the channels, with luminous, luminous, luminous light. And breathe in again. And a third time. When you're ready. Okay. So one of the variations on this is the white light and black smoke, or if that doesn't work very well for you, because it depends on the person, just the notion that the confusion and the difficulties are being moved out by the exhale. You can do this for as many times as it feels comfortable. Some people find, you know, just doing it a couple of times settles them. Some people will do it 3, 4, 5 times. There's no right or wrong to that. And what's different about it than the It is stable. All of the watching the breath meditations, whether it be scanning your body, just watching your breath, or counting the breath, are all stabilization. They're all to kind of just bring you here and now into the moment. But the difference between the 9-round breathing and those is what you're doing with the 9-round breathing is you're introducing some very mindful control. And it's not necessarily more stabilizing, but it's another step in not letting all of the thoughts that run through your mind run the show, but you working with your mind to be the director. I think that might be one reason why I really like it a lot. But so here's some information I found out, because a question was presented last week about, she noticed, tell me your name again.
Halita.
What?
Halita.
Halita. It noticed that I was doing this, and she noticed that when Geshe Gelug, who taught us on Sundays, he would often do this, and that the way she was taught by her grandfather was this. Oh, this way? Okay, so thank you for correcting that. And so I asked one of the monks who's a great practitioner, and has been a monk for about 40 years and studied with many of the lamas. And I said, what don't I know here? And he said, well, he said, depending on the tradition where it was taught, he said, there's none of those are right or wrong ways to do it. He said, but depending on the tradition, he said, some of this, he said, in some of the higher tantric practices, there are certain hand mudras, and when I, showed him this, and this, he said, I'm not sure if those are mudras, but it possibly could be hand mudras. But in whatever tradition we were taught, and his phrase, and actually it's one of the phrases the Dalai Lama comes back to, is that however you were taught, and whatever method you were taught, that you have confidence and feel comfortable doing, don't let someone that comes around and says, oh no, it's got to be this finger versus this finger versus this finger, disturb your mind. Go with what you've been taught and what you have confidence in and stuff. So that's my and if I get more information on that, I will be glad to share, but that's what I was able to find out. What I will talk about is the channels. One of the things that this monk also told me, Venerable George also told me, is that very often the left channel, which is white, is associated with anger. That's the kind of impurities that might collect there. And the right side is attachment. And the center channel that you're trying to clear is ignorance. So, and if you think of all the things that get you in trouble in life, that discomfort your mind, getting upset about what you didn't want, being very attached to something and exaggerating how important it is, and then not being realistic about something and exaggerating it, that's mostly when I get my mind disturbed, I can track it back to one of those. So this is a way of clearing that. So let's see. So I've already asked you, I've done my job, I've asked you, so is the right and left hand, is that clearer now? Okay. Yes, please. There's a mic, and if you don't mind. Thank you.
Chair. I have a deviated septum.
What?
Deviated septum.
Ah.
So I can't breathe in or out of my left nostril. I mean, it's impossible. So how do I modify this? Yeah, football and...
Right, right, right. Or just...
Kid or just
okay, well, just the way it happened.
Yeah, so I can't breathe in or out. So when I'm doing this... What,
so when you
I,
do
should
this...
Should I do it through the same nostril or do it through the mouth? I'm thinking
so when
mouth.
You do it this way, you know, let's say when you've closed your left nostril, your right nostril, and you're trying to breathe in through your left. Nothing comes in. So essentially, you're holding your breath before you exhale.
Well, usually what I do is I breathe through my mouth.
I'm going to find out, because I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a great question, because you are not the only human being in the world that has a deviated septum or difficulty with that.
Sometimes
so.
I just breathe through in and out through my mouth, but, you know, I just would be curious to see.
I will ask, because I'm very curious myself.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, and that's the other thing, and I chuckled at this one. When I was asking Venerable George about, you know, the hand, he said, well, the very, very advanced practitioners don't need to close their nose, their nostrils at all. They can just do it mindfully, telling themselves to breathe in one nostril and out through the other. And I thought, okay. So, but that's a great question, and I will try. Crispy, could you give the mic to the gentleman? Thank you.
Could you describe again the center channel? I'm just trying to visualize what it would look like. You said it's like a shepherd's hook from the front towards the back, and then down the. Is it in the front of the spine?
It's in the front of the spine.
Okay.
Okay. And actually, I was looking for a board earlier tonight, thinking it would be much easier, as poor as my drawing skills are. But actually, if someone would, I'll pick it up. Okay. Would you come up here and stand up? And if you could stand to the side this way. So if I drew, like, if here's the center of her forehead, and I inside and then back in front of the spine, okay? Does that make to about four fingers below your navel?
Okay.
Okay? Does that? And then here. And again, it's the front of her spine, so if it's either side of her spine. And actually, I made a mistake, guys. It's really, you know, the last spot that a baby's head gets hard at, which is right about, is that about right? Here? That's about where these start. And going, running side by side. So here is where they hook up. Now, I did study at one point and have completely forgotten that there is some advanced practice about there's a certain point at which and I'd have to check this, and I'll see if I can for next week, is after you do the three rounds, you know, because you've linked them together like this so that, you know, air can come, you know, like that. My understanding, and I have to check this, is that when you do the central channel, you know, when you're breathing in and out through both nostrils, what you do is these two tubes come and enter the base of the central channel so that you're breathing in and then sending everything up through the center channel and out here. But I will check that, okay? Sorry to, and I think that it's probably an excellent illustration of the fact that there are many, many variations, and, but the main point of this is that there are energy channels. The energy channels are the kind of subtle channels on which your thoughts ride. So the cloudier they are, the harder it is to think more clearly, at least this is the perspective from the Vedic and the Buddhist philosophy of breath. You know, you can buy it or not buy it, try it out. So I thought, I was thinking, well, everybody's coming here and, you know, there's all this assumption that, you know, meditation is supposed to be good for you. You know, and everybody came here, not everybody, but most of the people when we went around the room and talked about why people might want to be here, it was like, I'd like to feel a little bit calmer, I'd like to be maybe not so reactive, I just want to be more peaceful. Some people, you know, already have a very strong commitment to their spiritual life, and they wanted, would meditation and being centered that way help deepen that practice? And I don't know about other people, but the only reason I have to say that I'm my seeking of a spiritual life is somewhat, I'd like to say it, my eventual goal is to benefit others, but I would say I'm still at the path where I'm just trying to be kind of content myself, and that's my reason. And I've always noticed that the more spiritually centered I was, the happier I was, and the, you know, as I said. So there's a guy named David Snyder who did lots of research on it, and all of this information, I didn't go into his footnotes and everything, but they come from the American Medical Association, the American Heart Association, Journal of Medicine, and one other thing, in terms of National Institute of Health research, in terms of just mindfulness, stabilizing breath meditation, you know, in whether it be from the perspective of transcendental meditation, the Maharishi Yoga, Vipassana, or what, you know, what we're talking about here, that is calm and more relaxed mind and body with fewer negative thoughts. It, a byproduct seems to be a reduced heart rate, a more stable blood pressure. It reduces the risk of heart disease. It supposedly is a stress-reducing factor. I found this interesting. It contributes to the tendency to let things unfold rather than forcing things to happen. There used to be a phrase in the 60s, I'll show my age again, called "Don't push the river." Not as interested in conflict, not as interested in being right. There's a great phrase, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? Just sometimes feeling happy and content and liking yourself and others. Frequent bouts of smiling. I have been accused of that. Feeling and interconnected with other living beings. And along with the loss of interest in conflict, the loss of somewhat of a loss of interest in trying to criticize, just kind of letting it be. Okay? And I found this very interesting because this is one of these next two are associated with people that are considered really good thinkers and problem solvers. One is the tendency to notice the similarities rather than the differences between situations and people. So you're not always, you know, looking for what doesn't match, but looking for what matches. And also a tendency to stay more in the present moment. So I guess, from my perspective is that, gee, if I got a third of those, that wouldn't be bad. I'd be happy. So, so I thought you people would be interested in the research. And this is the other thing that, one of the other things is the quality of our thinking, because part of watching your breath is it's I think the buzzword still today and many years ago was metacognition, watching your mind do, you know, watching your mind do what your mind does. And one of the results of that is an ability, you know how the expression people say, I can't see the forest for the trees, or I tend to be a big picture person and lose the details. Well, one of the benefits supposedly in the research about meditation is it gives you a lot more pliancy moving back and forth from big picture to detail, big picture to detail. And I thought that was, it certainly could, it has been beneficial, it could have been beneficial to me at certain times. So, let's go, so the main focus of this, well, we could do, no, we won't do that. Let's see. So now we're going to talk about the different, so I talked about what we've been practicing these first 2 weeks is pretty much stabilization meditation. There's other varieties of them, but most of it has to do with the breath or staying focused on, like in TM, they would give you, a mantra that would be your absolute focus to, settle you. But what's the point of stabilizing your mind? I mean, you can feel calmer. That's nice. But if you spend all your time just stabilizing your mind, you probably wouldn't get off the cushion, and I'm not sure you'd get, your employer might not be happy. It would be very pleased that you had a very stable mind, but he might be liking you to do something with it. Or your children, you know, your child who is screaming, I'm very glad your mom, your mind is stable now, would you please change my diaper, you know? So once we have the stable mind and in a sense of clarity and some flexibility, what are we going to do with it? And so one of the other types of meditation is what they call analytic meditation, which is choosing a topic, choosing something, and taking the focus that you've acquired with your stabilization and really trying to look at it very carefully and in detail. So what are some of the kinds of, everybody's very good. I'm sorry, I will not speak for other people. I suspect that many of you are very good at analytic meditation. And unfortunately, what I have to say for myself is originally I was much more familiar with analytic meditation from a perspective of proving that you were wrong. You know, you did something that annoyed me, and I was angry, and so he did this, or she did this, and then she did this, and then she did that, and she did that. And if you think about it, what I was doing was very carefully analyzing the event, the conversation, my reaction, what I thought the other person's reaction was, and I was very skillful at it. And the reason I bring that up is a lot of people say, well, I can't do analytic meditation. I mean, there are certainly many situations in your life, whether they be positive or negative, that you replay. You know, you look at them, you pull them apart, you see what's, you know. That's analytic meditation. The question that I think we're dealing with here is, once I've done that analysis, am I calmer, more peaceful, and do I have a plan I can live with comfortably to do versus I practiced it so much the next time I saw the person, I blew up at them, and now the relationship's not so great. I don't know if anybody's rehearsed what they're going to say to somebody when somebody's significantly late and didn't bother to call, and you go from worry something bad happened to like when they walk in the door, you don't know whether to be relieved or kill them. No, I don't mean to kill them, but I mean, but yell at them, whatever. So analytic meditation is one of the primary ways that we can begin to think about changing our state of mind and developing in response to things that might normally be distressing or have habitually been distressing, that's a better phrase, choose a different response. Because if we don't analyze it, we're not going to be able to choose a different response. So I was thinking about that, and this is not quite... I'm going to refer to it as four kinds of mindfulnesses, and you'll see them you'll see this with a different explanation. But what I mean is, when we think of what we can be mindful of and look at and examine in our body, the first thing is mindfulness of our body. You know, where does it ache? Where is it tense? Where is it tight? And in a way, the place where we use analytic meditation is, oh my gosh, I really overdid it in the garden today. That's why, you know, my legs ache, and I think I'll take some ibuprofen before I go to bed, because I will sleep better and I will be happier in the morning. And I'm not pushing medication here, but I'm just saying that's being mindful of what your body is doing, thinking about the causes, what caused it. Overwork the muscles, they're inflamed. What takes care of inflammation? Ibuprofen. I can take some. Does that make sense to people as kind of the kind of analysis we do all the time? And what we're talking about is having access to it at those moments when we're more disturbed or more mindfully. So there's mindfulness of the body. Then there's mindfulness of our feelings, okay? Now, all feelings in terms of, and the feelings can be as a result of what we see, what we hear. I'm talking about physical, what we see, what we hear, what we taste, what we touch, and our kind of our whole body. Well, basically, the only thing the eye can know is it has a sense. It sees, is it pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Pleasant meaning it's fine for my, keep my eyes open. Unpleasant is I want to close them. And neutral doesn't matter. Okay. What happens is very quickly is we have mindfulness of our mental states and we label the pleasant, unpleasant. It's pain, it's pretty, it's ugly. That's what's happening in our mind that, you know, glues itself to that initial physical thing. And then the last one is what I talked about before, which is mindfulness of objects, which is literally kind of your mind watching your mind, whatever. But the reason I'm going through this is when I'm talking about analytic meditation, one of the people will just say, oh, I just am angry, or I am disappointed, or, you know, just snap of a finger. And what thinking about mindfulness of the body and kind of mindfulness of feelings and mindfulness of kind of how we label it comes from, it's the beginning of what helps us to kind of pull it apart and see that maybe it's not as made of granite, as that feeling is not, that reaction is not as made of granite as we think it is. Most of the time, you know, that's maybe not a very skillful explanation, but another word for stabilization is concentration, and mindfulness. And then the analytic is, what we do with it, what our thoughts are, how we think about it, and the focus we bring to it. The primary thing I was going to talk about, wait a minute. I think I forgot something. This is the time you guys get to talk to each other. So, break up in twos or threes, whatever. I'm going to do the usual group thing, and if you want to talk to someone you don't know really well as opposed to somebody you know really well, that would be kind of neat. And talk about how your own... the effects of what happens when you become distracted, unfocused, and kind of overtaxed by a feeling, whether it be positive or negative. Just talk about what happens when that happens in your life. And then we'll come back and we'll have the partner share what the person told them, and that way they won't have to be so brave. Okay? So. Yeah. Sure.
I find when I'm doing concentration meditation sometimes that issues come up that are front in my life that I only need to think about. It's almost like my mind tells me.
Right.
What I need to think about. Instead of saying, okay, I have a problem, I need to focus on that, it just comes to me. Like the things that I need to think about in my life come to me. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. We'll talk about that.
And then I can choose.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about that. You guys... Oops. Okay. Has everybody had enough time to share? Are we? Okay. Whoops. Un po. Go. Okay, let's come back together. Stay where you are if you want. That's fine, but let's... Thank you all. I have an amends to make, which is I started this class tonight, and I didn't suggest that we set a positive motivation. Now, I'm going to assume that the fact that everyone was here, that they were positively motivated. So I am going to rejoice in everybody's motivation to benefit their own minds and the minds of other beings as they learn a little bit about meditation. And apologize for my lack of focus and mindfulness and go on. So, any commonalities here? Anybody want to share? Yeah.
We figured out that one of the things we do, let's say we're involved in a task and we're interrupted, we distract ourselves by starting to do lots of other things. And it's almost like running away from the feeling of being irritated, not wanting to deal with it at that particular point in time. So we distract ourselves, you know, doing various things. And what's interesting, both Carol and I tend to do, like, if I'm just doing one thing, and I'm distracted, and we tend to do like five or six different things as a result of being distracted. So I thought that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. So does it end up maybe with some frustration later because you didn't get done what you wanted to do?
That's it, exactly.
Yeah, and okay. Where'd all this time go, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Anybody else?
Well, Carrie and I both discovered that we have an enormous capacity to stay focused and to stay on task. However, where we are divergent is how she deals with it when it gets to a point of getting to be too much and how I deal with it when it gets to be a point of being too much. So she prioritizes and reprioritizes and retasks. I tend to tea kettle.
So you tend to do what?
Tea kettle. Blow my top.
Okay.
So, yeah, but then it's done. For me, then it's gone and it's over and it's then I can go back to where I was.
So you kind of, you're like the emergency valve relief.
Right.
And the steam comes out.
Right.
And then the system goes back to operating.
Right, but it takes an enormous amount to get me there. An enormous amount to get me there. But when it does, I don't have that ability to say, okay, I'm getting ready to go.
Okay. So one thing that watching your mind or mindfulness day to day might benefit you is seeing some of the clues before it's at 212.
That's exactly why I'm here. Because by taking time out periodically through the day, I call them micro meditations. I do it periodically now through the day. It never ever gets to that point because I'm releasing stuff long before it could ever possibly get to that point.
Wow. Okay. You want to be my teacher? Anybody else? Anybody else want to share? Nope. Okay. There's a gentleman in the back who's...
Thanks. I think all of us, the four of us, kind of shared a similar characteristic of anxiety. If we get overwhelmed with things or tasks and anticipating what could happen, and that creates a lot of feelings of anxiety and stress, and we have different ways of coping with that. But I think it was sort of a common trait that we were describing, getting overwhelmed with so many things to do and then kind of getting anxious. I know I tend to, as you were describing, get to a point, well, you know, if I don't watch myself, I can just kind of blow my top, get overwhelmed with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to remind myself to kind of let go of and not attach so much to all the things that are happening. So anyway.
Okay. Thank you. Wow. Okay. So, that, and people didn't, so what I'm going to Well, how we're going to spend the rest of the time is I'm going to be a little bit rude, and I'm going to read a couple of things to you. They're very short, and I wasn't able to memorize them, so that's what we're going to do. And then what the meditation we're going to work on is when negative mind states emerge, come to us, some meditation techniques, a way to think about them, become familiar with them, and decrease their negativity or even flip it around a little. Okay? So, the first thing I'm going to start, I don't know what tradition it's from. It's a very old story, and it may even exist in other cultures, but there was a father who had a young son who was always getting angry, angry, always getting angry, and so didn't have friends, was in trouble, all of those things, and the father was just didn't know what to do, but because the son didn't seem to be much interested in it, but finally they were able to have a talk one day, and the son said something about being angry, and the father, instead of telling him to not be angry, said, well, why don't you just watch it? Watch it. Whenever you're angry this week, gave him a box of nails and a hammer. He said, I want you to put a nail in the fence out back. And so the little boy said, okay. And so at the end of the week, he went to his dad and said, there's a lot of nails. A lot of nails in that fence. Because I put one in every time I get angry. It's just a lot. There are quite a few nails. And so the father said, do you want to do something about it? And he said, I'd like to maybe not get angry so much or whatever. And whatever. The father said, why don't you just watch? And every time you notice yourself wanting to get angry, you don't get angry. I want you to take a nail out of the fence. And so that went on for a couple of weeks, and the little boy came to dad and said, I got all the nails out of the fence. That's terrific. That's terrific. And then the little boy said to dad, he says, but I got all the nails out, but there's still all these holes in the fence. And the dad said, yeah, I know. He said, that's one of the really hard parts about, getting angry or being mean. He said, even after we're quiet he said, there's still something there. And sometimes it doesn't look so nice. And I heard that story a long time ago. As I said, it was told to me as a Buddha story, but it could be a North Carolina Jack tale, because it's that universal. So I'm gonna take a minute and just read a couple of things about what negative thoughts do to us. Let's see. And let's see, page 54. If I become angry with the wielder of the stick, although I'm actually harmed by a stick, then since he too is secondary in being incited by hatred, I should be angry with his hatred instead. My mind will not experience peace if it fosters painful thoughts of anger. I shall find no joy or happiness. Unable to sleep, I shall feel unsettled. And then just I'll only bore you one, a couple more. Guess not. Guess I won't bore you with that one. Oh, that's the reason I can't. It's the wrong book. Amazing. Okay. Mind is the forerunner of all states. Mind is chief. Mind made are they. If one speaks or acts with a negative mind, suffering follows, like the wheel that follows the cart pulling ox. Mind is the forerunner of all states. Mind is chief. Mind made are they. If one speaks and acts with kind mind, happiness follows, like one shadow that never leaves. And this is from the Dalai Lama. We can spend our life trying to tame the world, a path that would never end, or we can take the more practical path of taming our own minds. The latter is by far the more effective approach and brings the most immediate, stable, and lasting solution. It contributes to our own inner happiness and also contributes to establishing an atmosphere of peace and harmony in the world around us. So his slogan is kind of better mind, better world. So for the rest of tonight, I'm going to talk a little bit about, and we'll do one meditation on dealing with negative energy. And negative energy, as I said earlier, seems to come from two negative states, either attachment. You know, I've got to have it, I've got to have it, I've got to meet the deadline, I've got to get the right color maroon, whatever. And aversion, I just can't stand this anymore, I'm really angry. And most of the time when we end up, if you think about when we have a negative mind state, it's usually one or the other. There's a series of phrases of that says it sounds very trite when you say it, but it's a statement that goes that anger is not getting what you want in the present. Resentment is not getting what you having not gotten what you want in the past, and worry is concern about not getting what you want in the future, and that pretty much covers it. I mean, you probably can come up with some other examples, but I'm sure you can. So when we're in that state of I don't like what's going on. Or it can be, I just got myself distracted and now I'm 10 minutes late because I was making good time and then something interrupted me and da-da. So what do we do with that? What I'd like to suggest is if the mind nature is absolute clarity, and its function is to think or cognize, and it's a continuum of mental moments, one mental moment following the other. It's pretty hard to believe, but at any moment we can change our minds. We can stop. So the biggest thing, and I'm hoping I can give you some ways to think about it in terms of analytic meditation tonight, is one of the best ways to not feel overwhelmed, whether it be too many tasks, not be angry, or not say, oh, I just can't stand this anymore, is to stop feeding it, stop giving it mental energy. And like I said, I won't speak for other people, but many of us are skilled at giving things the mental energy that sustain their existence to keep bothering us. as opposed to pulling away the energy and letting it fade. So here's some thoughts on that. Well, so here's some thoughts on ways of thinking about that. One is, and again, the phrase is very trite, but there, one of the ways of just when, and this is kind of, this is not a long, this is just, you know, kind of on the moment. I'm not talking, because, you know, when you're really upset, you don't have time, excuse me, I have to leave now for 5 minutes, I have to meditate so I don't yell at you. Sometimes you don't have time for that, you know. This too shall pass, you know, and we could talk about, I could talk for days on the Buddhist concept of, well, maybe I couldn't talk for days on the Buddhist concept of impermanence, but other people could. But the fact is that even in kind of conventional reality, things are always changing from moment to moment to moment. And if when upset, we can go to that place of saying, this is not permanent. And I think that's one of the things that makes negative emotions so difficult, is when you're angry, you're not getting what you want. Venerable George is using the example that, you know, a partner that you care about very much has said they don't care about you anymore and they're leaving, and you're destroyed because no one ever will ever, ever care about you again in this lifetime or any lifetime for the future. And that's maybe not an accurate view of the situation. It doesn't mean the situation doesn't hurt. Yes, it does. When someone we care about says, you're not on my cloud anymore. But the misery that comes with it, that just beats you down, has to do with your belief that this rejection and the outcome of this rejection is permanent. So if you can even introduce some element of doubt when a situation is happening that you don't like, that it is not going to happen forever, it is a way of taking some of the it takes some of the negative energy away from it. I'm just asking you to think about this as a hypothesis and try it on. The other thing that can I was driving the other day and I didn't hit the person, and I didn't hit the person. I didn't even enter the crosswalk that they were in. But I could see from their perspective that I didn't see them in a time frame that would be comfortable for them. You know, it was a young man carrying a young child. You know, and I mean, it didn't screech up I was making the turn. And I realized somebody was in the thing, and I stopped. But he was like this, and he was angry. Yeah. And I didn't hear what he said, but if his facial expression was anything like what he said, my first kind of one of my responses, you know, sorry to tell you all my stories, is was like, look, well, I didn't hit him. I knew he was there. I didn't do it, but. What I did was I thought about, if I was a father carrying a young child and I saw someone turning into an intersection and I wasn't sure if they saw me, what would my reaction be? And it probably wouldn't have been much different than his. And to just say, oh, okay, it's too bad. And to think about the fact that as Raleigh gets more and more crowded and there's more and more, you know, that I'm going to have to be extremely mindful in certain neighborhoods about crosswalks. I mean, I have to be mindful in all neighborhoods, but about crosswalks. But there's some neighborhoods that have a crosswalk every 20 feet. And that's my job. And this person reminded me of it. But I was able to place myself in their shoes. So that's one of the other things. The big one for me is when I get hit by something comes at me that feels unacceptable and stuff. It may even be unacceptable. Is rather than focusing on myself, is to think, may that other person be safe, and may that other person be happy. Because one of the things that I've discovered is that most of the people that are really angry and very upset and being rude and doing negative things, I don't think I want to be in their minds. I would like their minds to be, you know, I just don't want to be. So can I just back up and wish them, you know, a better mind? I had a friend who was a clinician years ago and we worked in a difficult public mental health setting, and there were certain clients that were real energy drains. I mean, there was always a crisis. They were often angry and struggling very hard with life, and you didn't have much in the way to really help fix it. And one of the expressions that she used one day that I thought was, and so one of the things they talk about is, you know, when you can't do anything about a situation, sometimes it's easier to blame the other person. And one of the things that she said one day is, you know, these people that are struggling so hard with life and kind of so can be so annoying at times, you know, they don't wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, you know, I think I'll just be a real jerk today. And so kind of creating some space that it's, you know, whatever. So those are kind of some apt ones, but I'm going to go back to the impermanence in terms of how do we let go of things that are difficult in the moment in terms of the analytic meditation. For example, what would be, the doctor sends you for tests because you have some symptoms, and they're tests that you don't know the answer yet, but it could be anything, or it could be death in 6 months. You just don't know. And so you make the appointment. But over the next few days, it's really hard to keep your mind from going to worst-case scenario. Yeah, it's going to be awful. So you say, okay. So an example of doing this would be, okay, you know, do I know yet? No. Can I know yet? No. Have I done everything I can? Followed all the directions? Do I want to have a bad result? No. Can I do anything about a bad result before I find out? No. Is a bad result the end of the world? No. And just kind of, and kind of talking yourself out of the yes, it's gonna be this. I'm gonna be dead in the shortest length of time, and da da da. And that's an extreme example, but I think we do some of those things every day. Let's see. I hate it when I say And so, and I would suggest that when we get into a negative mind state, and we is that what happens is that something that happens that distresses us, our mind goes like this in terms of all sorts of different avenues about what we could say, what they said, how bad it could be. And what the stabilization and watching your breathing does is it brings it back into a channel and enables you to say, how serious is this? Do I have to do anything about it now? And whatever. And I think that's a very hard thing to do. I think it's very, because I think it's where a lot of anxiety comes from. It's certainly where a lot of my anxiety has come from, is the notion that something has to be done about anything right away. You know, we live in a culture and kind of coming back from that. So, one of my teachers, one of my teachers says that, whenever I've gotten, says, well, you could be dead tomorrow, so what, is that a big deal if you're going to be dead tomorrow? And I go, I guess not, you know. And that's pretty extreme, and I don't particularly like being told that sometimes, but it gives me a little bit of a sense of humor about the whole thing sometimes. So ways of transforming negative thought are thinking about that this will not last, thinking that the person is suffering, and just trying to make the club bigger, and you can choose not to join the club. The third thing is to realize that they are in a negative state and wish them well. Comments or thoughts about that? And again, so I mean, I think one of the things, regardless of what you believe, you can argue with the solidity of the feeling at the moment. So let's see. So shall we try this? Anybody can everybody come up with a negative situation they'd like to kind of think about and maybe replay and feel more comfortable with? If you can, I'll lend you a few of mine. No. Take a minute to settle our minds, and about, you know, 30 seconds, and do 9 round or just watching your breath, and then in about, I'll just start talking again. about a difficult situation, something that may have made you impatient, lost your temper, caused you to be scared, seen people as enemies, or perhaps been so upset you had to lash out at somebody. Remember, the situation is over, and that you remembering it, and it is gone, it is past. See if you can replay it, you know, kind of like YouTube, from beginning to end. Watch what happened. Watch, you know, what were your thoughts? What were your feelings? Now take a second and see if you can step back from it, because it is a memory. It isn't happening right now. You know? Now, what were some of the disadvantages of those negative feelings? Did your blood pressure go up? Did you yell at your boss? Did you do some shopping therapy? Did you do something reckless? Driving or something like that. Did anything you did in that situation make you feel happy or content? Now think, could I have handled the situation differently? Could I have not taken it quite so seriously? Was serious, could I have had some confidence that I could do the right thing without being upset or angry? When I stay calm in a difficult situation, how do I feel when it's over? Am I able to move on to the next thing a little more easily? When I handle a situation calmly, do I replay it as often as I need to when I allow myself to get angry? Spend the day angry or upset or running around being very efficient, doing task. Am I more tired than And when I have a day when I work, I move consistently and calmly through the day. So, if your answers to any of the questions were that when I am calm, life is better for myself and others, set an aspiration. That you can respond with openness and patience. In the situations that confront you every day. And set an aspiration that you may be safe, that you can be healthy, that you can be happy. And even if you can't wish that for other people, that you can recognize that they also want that. And again, rejoice that you have this mind that changes moment to moment to moment and can become calmer, more patient, clearer, and happier. And now that you have created all that positive energy, dedicated to your well-being and that of all others, thank you. So what we did at the end was handout 8, which is transforming negative experiences into positive. And if you liked it, try it. And we will meet again next week at 7. And then the following week, which I believe is November 4th, we will not meet. I have the privilege of hearing the Dalai Lama in New York, so I'm going to go do that. And then, so our last class will be on November 11th. So, thank you so much for being here. It was wonderful. Very grateful to your presence.